Well, from Edwardian splendour to the music of an emerging democracy, East Timor. Noel, welcome.
We are off to East Timor. It's time for a check-up. There's a prime ministerial election in the wind over there, of course. And there have been a few reports actually today of some disturbances around Dili. It doesn't appear to be so serious at this point, but there have been some reports there. And I thought it was about time to connect up again with Caritas, because Caritas, the big Catholic agency, has big offices in Dili and in the other diocese of Bacau as well, both. And the Australian group partners with them. Mark Green's the country director, and I thought this was just the time to give him a ring and see how things are. He should be on the line right now.
Hello, Caritas Australia. Mark Green speaking.
Hello. Mark, Noel Debien speaking here.
G'day, Noel. How are you going?
Good. How are you this evening?
In good form, thanks.
You're the country director with oversight there. What's the main work you're doing there?
Well, it's got four main components to our work. We've got a rural program, rural development program in Akusi, which is a little enclave that belongs to East Timor in West Timor. We've got a human rights, law and justice program, which really is about practical human rights rather than the theory thereof. We've got a partnership program where we're trying to assist various local community organisations and NGOs to develop their capacity and their ability to assist people in Timor. And then we are also part of a, well, for want of a better word, an emergency appeal which was set up to address the emergency that took place last year, and it's managed by Caritas Australia.
Now, that little enclave you mentioned, I've always wondered about that, and I don't know the particular history of it, because there's just the little bit, isn't there, which is in the middle of West Timor, but which is identified as part of East Timor. What is the history there?
Well, I'm not the full bottle on it, but I understand in essence that it was the place when the Portuguese came that they first landed, and they had a settlement there. And then when things were not working out, they travelled up, I guess if you're looking at it from a Kusi's perspective, up towards where Dili is now. And then they established their settlement there. So for those historical reasons, Kusi's always been regarded as part of the Portuguese territory and therefore part of the independent East Timor.
And we're not talking about, because Timor's not huge, is it? We're talking, what, 300 kilometres long or something. And I think Dili from this little area looks 150 k's or something like that?
Yes, that's something like that. It's not Akusi is not a large area at all. But it's quite strange, because when you travel there from Dili, you travel on a ferry, and the ferry takes it takes a night. But in fact, in distance, it could really do it in 3 or 4 hours. It takes a night because the government doesn't want people landing either in Dili or in Akusi in the middle of the night when there's no one to pick them up.
If I decided, you know, this is for an outsider who doesn't understand the lay of the land there at all, if I wanted to drive, you know, from Dili down through Lekisha and I wanted to get down to Pantai Makassar, which is across Indonesian territory, could I do that?
If the border was open, you might be able to do that, provided you had a visa to enter into Indonesia, but often the border is closed. At the moment it's open, but in the last presidential election it was closed for most of that period. So sometimes you just simply can't get across the country like that.
And is there a level of trade and cooperation going on between East and West Timor now?
Well, Akusi is interesting, because in Akusi they've had that natural relationship even before the Indonesian invasion. Because Akusi is just, you know, it's so dependent on the West Timor around it. So there's a natural relationship there, which is only really impaired by the fact there's a legal border there. But many of the locals know their way around that. In the rest of the country, where the relationship is not as natural as that, that's an area that is being worked out. I think the president's visit to Indonesia is a symbol of where the country wants to go.
Indeed, it struck me that he made the effort to travel there and to visit. It seems there's a cultivation of good relations with Indonesia underway.
Oh, absolutely. and you know, when you're here, you're surrounded by Indonesia. It's geographically, it's clear who the predominant trading partner is going to be. You know, culturally, Indonesia is very close to East Timor, whereas Australia, culturally, not so much geographically, but culturally, is very far away. So I think it's a natural relationship, and I think if there could be a process of reconciliation, perhaps a little bit further down the track, it's an economic and cultural relationship that would be considerably enhanced.
I'm interested to know, when you mentioned you're doing human rights work there in Akusi, what's that about?
It involves several facets. There's been a long-standing program to work with and empower women. So there's been a lot of capacity building of women's NGOs. There's also been a serious and systematic attempt to address some of the gender violence issues, domestic violence, sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And most recently in that program, we've also been doing a lot of peace-building activities, the practical sort of human rights.
Well, I'm interested to get you to unpack that a bit. When you say building the capacity of NGOs, I'm interested in it. What does that actually mean? What do you do when you do something like that?
Well, let's say that you've got a particular community, and in that community a local organisation of women identifies that domestic violence is an issue in that community. And they may not have, this little NGO or this little community group may not have the resources to be able to begin in that community to address and work at reducing the incidence of domestic violence. So we, Caritas Australia and indeed other organisations, would assist them by resourcing them, providing training, mentoring, help with how to prepare a financial plan, an activity plan, just so that they can begin to deal with the problem in their community.
Can you give us a bit of background as to why domestic violence might be an issue? What is that about culture there or the experience?
It seems to have been a long-standing issue, but in Indonesian times it appears that violence towards women was used as a way by some, not by all, but by some to, I suppose, pacify or keep the population under the thumb. And as a result of that, it's become more prevalent in the culture.
Caritas is effectively a religious agency, but it's involved in quite a number of different things, not only this sort of capacity-building stuff. What other things are you involved in?
We've got farmers' groups in Akusi that we work with, helping to get water supplies in, and then once water supplies in, to teach them composting methods to improve their quality and yield of crops. We've got microfinance happening in one part of Akusi called Pasabe. We've got a project going on in Kuteti, a mountainous area, to assist the community to rebuild their road so that they'll be able to market their goods and get goods in and out, because that's been the main problem that's caused them to have a lot of starvation and malnutrition.
You've been there a reasonable amount of time now. How much progress has been made in terms of infrastructure, building economic prosperity? You've mentioned microfinance. How much success are you observing at this point?
In the country as a whole, looking at it as a whole, it's very slow. There is not a lot of infrastructure. We've still got brownouts in Dili, usually for 3 hours a day in some areas. In Akusi, there's only power on, if you're lucky, for 3 hours a day. The roads in Akusi particularly are in a pretty appalling condition. In the other part of East Timor, they're better. The work in building up the infrastructure at that level is still very slow. Along the way, we've had some setbacks. I think not so much in Akusi, but in the rest of East Timor, the emergency in April last year really set us back.
Well, that whole issue of political stability, even today we're getting reports here that there have been outbreaks of violence again around Dili. Now, have you been observing that yourself? Have you seen any of that?
Occasionally, we've got a very good security network. So when an area or a group of people in an area begin to break out into violence, a lot of warnings go out, and so we're advised not to travel to those areas, which we all adhere to. I must say, having been in Australia up until the end of March this year and hearing the same reports you're hearing and now being here, for me it's been a very different experience. I haven't seen the sort of scale of violence here that sometimes the reporting in Australia would suggest it's going on. A lot of the incidents are quite sporadic and quite contained, and it just hasn't been as frightening as some of the media reports in Australia had suggested.
Your impression is there we're getting wrong end of the stick here. It's a bit exaggerated.
Well, I think it's exaggerated. But having said that, I know that when you've been in a situation of violence such as we saw last year, which was very frightening, where there were houses being burnt, where people lost so much, and you begin to see violence breaking out again, you instinctively fear the worst. And I think the blessing for me is that I wasn't here when that happened, and so I don't have that reaction to it. But I'm certainly aware on my staff that others do.
You're in election time, though, too, aren't you? That must be, I suppose, causing some level of unrest as well.
No doubt about it. There's a campaigning style, I guess, which would be very unfamiliar to us.
Tell us about it.
Well, you get truckloads of young people driving through the various villages in particular sub-district, and they are shouting slogans, and they are, I suppose, G-ing up the people, and then there are speeches, and then sometimes a rival political group will arrive at the same time and attempt to disrupt that campaign with similar tactics. And if they're successful in getting in, if the UNDP aren't aware that it's happening or that they can't manage it, then you might get an outbreak.
So it's quite robust.
It's very robust. It's very robust, and it's not funny. It's not funny at all when things happen. The other thing to say too is that there's a lot of youth unemployment. The figure quoted often is about 50%, and when people are sitting around drinking for a long period of time, that also adds another dynamic to things. So what may not be very significant is often blown out of all proportion, and before long, instead of one person being disgruntled or a couple, a whole community is upset. And often alcohol is at the root of a lot of the worst cases of the violence.
If you had to say what the main priorities are for Caritas when you're looking around the country at the moment, where is the most of your effort directed?
Most of our effort is directed in supporting partners to become stronger and better equipped to respond to the needs of the community groups that come to them for assistance. The aim of our work is, if you like, in the long term, to leave behind, particularly in the Catholic sector, a robust and capable NGO network. And so, as far as we possibly can, all the things that we particularly want to do, whether it's agricultural development or whether it's work in human rights, we're trying to work with partners who can continue that work long after we're gone.
I'm interested to know, you mentioned the Catholic sector then. What do you mean by the Catholic sector? My understanding, it's 90% Catholic, the island.
That's right. So a lot of the NGOs have a particular faith focus, although not all. But there are a group of four in particular partners that we work with who have a lot of impact and influence in the country: Caritas Bacau, Caritas Dili, which are the Caritases of the two local dioceses here, and also the Peace and Justice Commissions of the same diocese, which are both doing a lot of peace building work.
How much of the burden do these church agencies actually take when compared to, say, government?
At the moment, the reality in East Timor for us is that international non-government organisations and local non-government organisations are probably doing far more than they would in many other countries, because the capacity of the government and its civil service is still very low. The civil service here has not yet really built the resource levels and the skill levels to be able to administer the budget that it has in a way that's effective, and it's going to take some time. Education levels here are quite low. One of the things I've observed is that children are often only in school for a couple of hours a day, and teachers are still not being paid, and that's why kids are in school only a couple of hours a day. And
teachers are not being paid?
That's correct, yeah. So some of the ministries don't have the organisational framework and the systems in place that enable them to administer an effective operation. That's sort of, I guess, the context in which we do a lot of our work. And you can understand that when you think of the history of the country, where many people, because they were living in the mountains or in remote parts of districts, because they were in hiding or they were in fear, missed out on periods of education.
Mark Green, Country Director for East Timor, Caritas Australia, thanks for speaking to Sunday Nights.
Very welcome. I've enjoyed it very much.